Welcome to another edition of The Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. Today is Saturday, October 7th, 2023. Of course, the website is therealistreport.com, where you will find an extensive archive of these podcasts, as well as other programs I participate in. You will also find all of my blog posts and articles, my Twitter feed, which is embedded in the right-hand sidebar of the website, a contact page, and many other useful and important links. I am on Twitter and Gab at Realist Report, and you can find me on Telegram at t.me/TheRealistReport. I am a regular reporter for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, and I also contribute to and help edit The Barnes Review, a bi-monthly revisionist history magazine. Please do consider subscribing to these fine print publications if you do not already. Check out AmericanFreePress.net and BarnesReview.org for all the details. All right, today I'm joined by Kathleen Dudley, a holistic health practitioner, an activist, and an independent researcher. All right, Kathleen Dudley, welcome to the program. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, John. Thank you very much for this opportunity and looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for joining us on the program today. I know we've been trying to set up, you know, an interview for a few weeks now, so thank you very much for your flexibility. I appreciate it. And this is something I very much have looked forward to. I know there's all sorts of topics that we could discuss today, and I know you've appeared on Giuseppe's program, The Sane Asylum. I think you actually were just on there the other day, right?
Yes, I was. And as a result, I received my first hate mail.
Oh, wow. Well,
I take that as a badge of honor.
Oh, wow. That's unfortunate, but I guess it kind of comes with the territory, right?
Apparently so.
Yeah, Giuseppe's a good friend of mine. I do a regular show with him on Sunday evenings, every other Sunday. Although, yeah. So I've been, and I've known him for a few years now. We've done plenty of shows in the past. He's been on my program. I've been on his program multiple times. And I know you've done interviews with my good friend, Monica Schaefer, and
yes.
Also Jim Rizzoli, who are both two individuals that I very much admire and respect and follow their work pretty closely. So you've definitely made the rounds, and you know, you've addressed all sorts of topics on these other programs. So to get started, since this is the first time that we've officially done a podcast, I'd like for you to kind of just introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your background and your experience in the alternative media and sort of like what led you to kind of become a, you know, a dissident or sort of like wake up to the way the world works. That's always an interesting story in my opinion.
And how I became a dissident?
Right. Well, I mean, just kind of like what led you down this path, you know, to where you're questioning all these official narratives of history and, you know, medicine and, you know, the court system and things of this nature.
All right. Well, that's hours long, but I will
put that into a crazy
and keep it short. I've been blessed to have a curious mind. And along with that curious mind comes a creative mind. And even though I didn't really awaken to a spiritual life until I was in my 40s, God forbid, I obviously had a very strong intuitive knowing, and through that had a connection with my spiritual self and the world without really defining it as such. I was born and raised in northern Alberta, and in fact, Monica Schaefer and I were born and raised within just about 46 miles of one another, which is rather amazing, and I take great honor in knowing her.
I thought that was very interesting when I discovered that when you guys did those interviews and I read about it on Monica's website. I was like, oh wow, you guys could have been neighbors or could have been friends growing up, and it's how appropriate now considering both of, you know, your interests.
Well, it is, and also the fact that you know, I just figure those hardy winters and the good ancestral stock of our families, you know, bore women who are standing strongly today, and I attribute it to those aspects. But I've always been someone who has rather been an observer. I've stood back and I've watched and through that observation, I have seen the duplicity in the world. I saw that in families. I saw it in my family. I saw it in the school system. I saw it everywhere. And so while I didn't have a big picture knowing of what that truly meant, I was registering it from the time I was very young. And so I was rather chomping at the bit to leave my small hometown, which was a rural area in northern Alberta, a farming community where my father was an entrepreneur. And I went on to become an entrepreneur as well, born of five children in a family, the only girl and the only entrepreneur until some of my brothers went that path as well. It meant that I had to think smart and quickly and find a way to sustain myself financially, passionately, emotionally, because as we know, living life is quite a responsibility and it's quite quite a joy when we embrace it and truly fulfill our passions. And so by being an entrepreneur, I was able to stay true to myself, not sell my soul to anyone, and always stay aligned with what I believed was my guiding intuitive knowing, which I now know is the divine within. And my connection to nature growing up in a rural northern Canadian area, I was always out in nature. And I see, as I look back today, how grounding and how healing that has been for me throughout my life. I became I had a design and architecture practice. I taught at a college in Seattle for 14, 16 years. I became a photographer. I've always been a musician, but I took that on very strongly a number of years ago. I started a band during COVID. It was shut down. That was a really serious blow to me. But I've continued with voice lessons and take great joy in that. I've done some painting. I became a reflexologist after dabbling in palmistry, realizing that the lines on the hands and the lines on the feet actually mean something quite specific and offer a tremendous amount of guidance for our health and healing process. And along with that, I've studied herbs and homeopathy. Of course, nutrition is at the basis of all of this. And then I moved back to New Mexico, where I found myself in my gypsy life. And COVID hit. And along with that, two lawsuits. And that threw me into a whole other area of study, and that was constitutional law. So I've really done a gamut of investigations. And unfortunately, this last part in which I find myself, I have gone kicking and screaming. I've never really been interested in law. I've never been interested in knowing about the legal system. But here today, that's where I am.
Wow, that's very, very interesting. A very interesting story. There's a couple of follow-up questions I want to ask. One, how did you get to New Mexico, and how long have you been living there?
Well, I was living in Seattle, where I lived for 25 years, where I completed my college and had my design and architecture practice and taught. And I had met a homeopath, and that drew me to New Mexico, and we ended up marrying, and I ended up living in New Mexico for 25 years, although the marriage ended a few years ago. And so that's how I ended up in New Mexico, and I consider it a curse and a privilege, because New Mexico is an extremely communist state. It's a very dark place. Jeffrey Epstein's ranch is here. There's tremendous difference in between the haves and the have-nots, with total intention. And there's a patron system that rules New Mexico, which is the New Mexico Mafia. And while I got the glimpses of that 25 years ago when I first moved here, it really truly rivets me to the core when I see the power and the duplicitous and criminal nature of what is taking place in New Mexico, and the fact that I'm still here.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. No, that's very interesting. And I was curious because I know a lot of your the legal disputes that you've been involved with have taken place in, I believe, is it Mora County, New Mexico? It's sort
of a
rural county north of Albuquerque, north of Santa Fe. So it's, you know, I just actually looked it up on the map. It looks like it's like basically like the north central part of the state.
Northeastern, actually.
Northeastern. So you were in Seattle for like 25 years, and then you've been in New Mexico like pretty much ever since?
Well, yes. I took almost a five-year sabbatical and lived at the ocean in Oregon, and that was a delight. I mean, absolute delight. And the only reason I came back was my property wasn't selling. I had listed it, and in fact, it's listed today. And it's still not selling. And so I'm still here. But I had a lovely reprieve of being away and living with musicians and meeting people that were just phenomenal. Not that I don't have some wonderful people that I have met here, but in terms of the locale where I'm situated, I'm looking forward to leaving again.
Right. Yeah, I can imagine, especially given all these, you know, legal disputes that we'll kind of get into as we proceed here. So you said that you've been a musician and you had started a band, which, you know, sort of came to a halt with the whole COVID pandemic. What kind of music are you into, and do you like play instruments, or are you a singer, or you want to talk just a bit about like your musical background?
Sure. I started out as a child playing piano, and I don't play a lot now, but I have continued to study as an adult. Today, I love singing different languages. So I sing in French and German and Italian. I sing in different dialects, Celtic, Southern, whatever, and I love cowboy music, you know. So country music is one of my favorites. So if you can imagine Willie Nelson's Crazy, and then go to Vagaluna, you know, it's really a delight. It just tickles me to do that. And when I had my band, I was the lead vocalist, and I played mainly ukulele. I have played guitar and banjo, and I play harmonica. So I really like to accompany my voice more than I like playing an instrument these days.
Okay, I gotcha. Interesting. Yeah, I love country music. That's one of my favorite genres. Always has been, probably always will be. So that's interesting. Now, you had talked about how you sort of got into holistic health, and you consider yourself a holistic health practitioner. How did this come about? Did you just like discover somebody, or somebody turned you onto it? And you want to talk about like your experience with your holistic health practice?
Well, it's an interesting one, and it starts off when, you know, from the time I was born. My mother gave birth to three babies that died, and she was treated by the allopathic medical system with antidepressants rather than treating her for grief. And that's really criminal, but that's what they did. And so she became a woman who, rather than being embraced for her emotional grief, she was medicated heavily. And so I was raised to really to caretake her, to at one point I was on the path to being a nurse, an RN. And I saw this, and I saw her addiction to these pharmaceuticals, and I saw what it did to her, a very lovely, beautiful woman who never could maintain her stability in terms of her emotional stability, because the drugs had just taken over her life. And so a brother of mine and I both have gone very much into the whole holistic realm, me more than him. But then I was always reading about nutrition and vitamins and minerals, and I was always gardening from the time I was knee-high to a grasshopper, and then I was doing organic gardening, and then I was, I was learning about herbs, and I married a homeopath, and I worked, side by side with him, and learned about homeopathy, and raised my animals on holistic, organic, raw meat diets, and was teaching myself how to eat a healthy meal. And then through the palmistry that I became interested in learning about, I found out about reflexology. And then I combined all of that into a reflexology practice. So it's been an evolving process. And it put me really ahead of the game when COVID hit, because I saw the duplicitous nature of the whole COVID scam, because they were attempting to take Louis Pasteur's germ theory and promote it again, like Rockefeller did when he first established his first hospital of big pharma and virology in the late 1800s. And there, but I've known about Antoine Beauchamp for, three decades, all about the terrain theory. And so none of that was a surprise. And I looked at that and I thought, wow, I sure hope a lot of people are on board with the terrain theory, because look at what they're trying to do to the population. And so it's been a long process.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. I mean, I don't know how much you know about my background, but I really became skeptical of the media and the government, and just how I just recognized we were being lied to sort of at an early age, just like you. I think that's a very common trait in many of us that have, seen through the lies, seen through the deceptions. And I started researching 9/11, and I was very much against all the wars and our foreign policy and that sort of thing. But I mean, once you start doing that, you quickly recognize that we've been basically lied to about everything, including our healthcare system and just, the mainstream medical practices and the whole, big pharma industry. And I'm very sorry to hear about your mother. That's very tragic. And the sad thing is that there's many such cases all around the world. And I remember in high school, and like once I got into college, like my freshman year, sophomore year of college, some good friends had gotten like really hooked on pharmaceutical drugs. I think it was OxyContin, actually. And I mean, that was like the main one, but they had been doing other pharmaceutical drugs as well. And I thank God I never got involved in it. It was always something that I just didn't understand and wanted nothing to do with, really, but it had a very, very negative impact on their lives, at least some of them. And I mean, and there, again, many such cases like this. And then you look at who was behind all that, and it's of course the Sackler family, and they're basically, getting let off the hook. So anyways, I guess what I'm saying is that I became very skeptical of the mainstream medical establishment quite early on. And, I've done interviews with like Dr. Lorraine Day, for example, and she's very much into the terrain theory. And I'm wondering, I don't know if you're able to, but is there any way you could like give me like just a basic summary of germ theory, which is very prevalent in like a mainstream accepted, concept in mainstream medicine versus the terrain theory?
Sure. So the idea of the germ theory, and it was completely concocted by Louis Pasteur, and Rockefeller actually paid him to come forward, from what I understand, to promote it. And then on Louis Pasteur's deathbed, Pasteur recanted and said, you know, this was all really made up. But the germ theory was that there's actually something outside of us that then occupies our body and causes disease.
And like a virus, for example, with the whole COVID thing. Yeah,
exactly. So in other words, if you think about it, and you think about every single ecosystem has its own micronutrients, it has its own biome, and the very best way to inculcate our gut so that we have a tremendous variety of organisms in our gut for health is to go and roll in pig manure, or go and clean a chicken coop, or rub your face in a cat or a dog's, stomach, and and nuzzle them, and to really take in all of these different so-called, germs or viruses, so that we have a tremendous variety. And what the germ theory says is, oh, no, you must use antiseptic. You must wash your hands after everything you touch, and you must use an antiseptic on your floors and your walls and your ceilings, and because they could attack you and they could make you sick. And it's really quite the opposite. We want all of these varieties. We want to breathe them in. We want them a part of our gut. And so the germ theory was promoted so that we would then become frightened of the environment, frightened of nature. And what did Jung say? Carl Jung said, as soon as you remove yourself from nature, you become neurotic. Society develops a neuroses. So, really, it was a promotion of neurotic behavior, the whole germ theory. Now, the terrain theory that Antoine Beauchamp knew about and promoted, and this was in the 1880s when they were, they were colleagues. And basically, he said that what is going on in our body is the terrain, and the terrain of our body determines in large part how we absorb food, ultimately our health. And so we must always take a look at what the digestion and elimination is, and how we promote a healthy terrain in our gut. And I've known about the terrain theory, and it has made so much sense. And many doctors throughout COVID, Andrew Kaufman and Thomas Cohen, fortunately, from the very beginning, were on alternative media, were telling people, no, look at the terrain theory. Don't pay attention to this germ theory, because it's been well paid for. And big pharma is all about the germ theory and all right. These toxic medications to deal with the germ, the antibiotic, the anti-life, right? Rather than supporting.
I'm curious, are you familiar with Dr. Sam Bailey? I think she's from New Zealand.
I'm not.
Okay, I'll send you a link.
Please.
Once the program's over. Yeah, I don't know exactly like her background. I know she was like a mainstream doctor for like a long time, and the whole COVID operation really kind of woke her up to what was really going on. And I think she's pretty much adopted the terrain theory as her understanding of how the body really, really works and what ultimately, health is all about. And my understanding is like the body itself, like disease itself, like cancer or a cold or whatever ailment you're experiencing, is a direct result of how you yourself are treating your body, what sort of foods you're eating, what sort of water you're drinking, how much you're getting in the sun, how much you're exercising. So basically, it's like the body responding to how you're treating it, right? Is that, do I have that right?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different perspectives on this. I mean, you know, the breatharians would say that food's actually toxic, and that, I mean, we absorb, since we're energetic creatures, we're all frequency, that we absorb 80% of all the nutrients that we need to survive and thrive from the atmosphere. I mean, if you think about looking at a tree that's potted, if it's potted in a pot, in 10 years, that pot of soil doesn't have a divot in it. In other words, even though that tree has grown 6 feet in that pot, it didn't take the nutrients from the soil. So where did it take its life energy from? You know, so we have to look at that part of it. So, you know, there's some people like Dr. John Tilden, who wrote a book called Toxemia Exposed in 1926, saying that it's the toxic substances, and these are the addictive substances, caffeine and alcohol and sugar and processed grains and all these different things that we consume that actually cause toxicity in the body. But the breatharians go even further than that. Otoma says that the length of time that a substance is in the body determines the amount of disease within the body. In other words, our body, our cells don't actually use the spinach or the cheese or the red meat or the apple to feed the nucleus of the cell. It's an ATP, you know, energy transport system that produces energy for the nucleus. So what we put in the body, the breatharians say, is just as habituated, and that's the food, as sugar or alcohol or drugs. And so what we really are needing to do is to ensure that whatever we put into our body in terms of whether it's junk food or it is an organic egg, free range, non-soy, non-corn fed, whatever quality you might want to encapsulate it within, we want to make sure the body eliminates it very quickly, because the food, no matter how toxic or how so-called healthy it is perceived by the body as a disease potential producer. So we're putting up with the food because it's a habit. And that's a hard one to get one's mind around.
Yeah, no kidding. I thought I had a pretty good understanding of this, but now you just threw a huge wrench. I'm like, wait, hold on. Food itself is toxic? I don't know about that. I'd have to probably do some more research, obviously. I mean, I do know this. For probably the past two, three years now, maybe even a little bit longer, I have really changed my diet. I mean, my diet has sort of evolved over the years, but at this point, I mean, I could basically live on eggs and veggies and like basically like salad and peppers and onions and carrots. And I make my own homemade sauerkraut, and I eat broccoli. And I mean, I do eat meat from time to time, but I can basically live on this, and I've never felt better. I've never had more energy. I've never like just been in better shape. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know. I guess I can maybe understand what you're talking about, but I'd have to definitely do some more research. I think that there are all sorts of toxic foods that are very prevalent in society. I mean, anything packaged, any soda, I mean, even alcohol, I mean, alcohol of course as well, but so much stuff that you get from the store is just so poisonous, frankly, and just there's nothing in there that's going to help your body in any way. And I think that's what's leading to all these, not only obesity, but all these other health problems that we see throughout society.
Well, definitely, for certain. And how you eat and what you describe sounds very much like my own diet. And don't get me wrong, I'm not a breatharian. I'm addicted to eating. I love intermittent fasting, and you know, so one or two meals a day at max. But one of the things that is very much missing, and Linus Pauling said this, that underneath all disease is mineral deficiency, and we've been knowing about this since the 1930s, because the soil has been deplete through NPK farming practices of the minerals. And if the plants don't take the minerals up from the soil and the soil's deplete from monoculture practices, then we can eat all the wonderful vegetables, carrots and lettuce and kale and cruciferous vegetables. We can eat all of them. But if the soil doesn't have those minerals, those plant-based minerals in them from the soil, then we are basically eating empty food. It's just bulk. That's a very serious issue. And so plant-based minerals are a must for everyone. You can get them in liquid, and they're a necessary adjunct to everyone's consumption every single day. And you can also get good sources of these 90 micronutrients and minerals through sea salt, and make a sole out of that. But even with that, plant-based mineral is much more readily available to the individual. And that is the key that is missing with every single disease. And if you look at the work by Dr. Joel Wallach, who is a veterinarian, he saw that. He saw that in how animals' foods are always fortified. And that wasn't happening with human food. And the number of birth defects in the animals were like 1/6 of that of human population. And so he went on to do some tremendous work and wrote a fabulous book called Dead Doctors Don't Lie. It's a great read.
Wow, interesting. Yeah, well, this topic fascinates me. I mean, the more that I learn about it, the more, and this is just one of many topics that I try to pursue in my free time, which is not, I don't really have a whole lot of free time these days, but I find it very interesting. I do know for sure that this is what I would recommend. If you have access to a farmer's market or if you can grow the food yourself, it is so much more nutritious, and it's very, very obvious as soon as you start eating like food straight from a farm, for example. Spend a week with it, just a diet from the farm, and you'll notice the difference. I mean, exactly. Eggs, for example, like I can't even eat eggs from the store anymore. They're so terrible compared to the eggs that you get from a farm. I like won't even buy them from the store anymore. I mean, and I don't really buy much from the store, actually. I try to get everything I can from the farmer's market. I mean, I guess there is some things I'll get from the store, but generally speaking, most of the stuff that I consume these days is directly from a farmer's market. I wish I could grow the stuff myself. I need to buy a farm and, or not even buy a farm, but just, have some space to do my own planting and stuff like that. But it is you will notice a huge difference in your diet and or not necessarily your diet. Of course, it's going to impact your diet, but it's going to have a major influence on your energy levels, on just everything. I mean, you'll lose weight. I mean, all sorts of things. So, anyways, yeah, this kind of I didn't expect to talk about this subject for this long, but I do have to ask you. I do have to, because I mean, I am very interested in it, but I do have to ask you about the whole COVID thing, because it sounds like COVID led to a lot of problems in your life, like many people across the country. You know, you had mentioned how it sort of disrupted your band, and I think this is when a lot of, not a lot, but some of these legal disputes started happening. Obviously, the whole country was quote unquote under lockdown. And the whole thing, I mean, from the very beginning, like you, I was very skeptical of everything. I don't even know if COVID is a real thing. I don't think it is a real thing, frankly. I certainly never took any vaccine. I never took a test for COVID. I wanted nothing to do with any of this. I mean, I will admit that I did put a stupid face mask on my face, when I had to, but I don't think I could ever do that again. Like, really, I mean, I'm at that point where, like, I don't know if I could ever put that thing on again if it came down to it. And that, of course, it's going to make life a little bit difficult because you're going to be confronted left and right. But the whole thing was just such a huge psyop. It was unbelievable. It was so evil. And just quickly, I don't know if you have any like just general comments on COVID and how it impacted you or what you make of the vaccine, for example. I mean, I was reading stories left and right about people being majorly injured by these vaccines, including many people dying across the country, across the world, for that matter.
Yes, well, I moved back to my property late 2018 and was working on a remodel. And then, of course, event 201. Is that what it was? 201? No.
Yeah, event
20, event, event 21.
Well, I think it was called event 201, was the pandemic simulation exercise.
Yes.
That Bill Gates. So
I saw that. I saw that and I went, wow. And
well, then now that was like October of 2020. Or sorry. I think that was October of 2019. Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Yes, it was. So I was here and I was doing a lot of writing and investigating and publishing on wireless and 5G, because that had been a very significant issue to me. And I worked with Arthur Furstenberg because he was in Santa Fe and I'd known him from some previous work. And he wrote the book, The Invisible Rainbow, and revealed the advent of technology and the outcropping of disease as a result of electricity. So I was doing that at that time, and then COVID hit. The lawsuit was filed in 2019, so it was pre-COVID, so to speak. But as far as I see it, COVID's only real in the eyes of those who manufactured the entire lockdown and the process. And they came up with a cute little name, COVID. And then they, by owning the mainstream media, managed to shove it down everyone's throats all across the world. And so is it real? Well, from that perspective, yes. But from my perspective and the terrain theory, you can't contract a virus. There are viruses. But when we eat something that doesn't settle with us, or we drink alcohol or too much food, or we eat junk food, the body is saying, look, you're polluting me. And so it gives you a headache. It gives you diarrhea. It gives you, you know, flu-like symptoms. And that's what COVID is. And so they distracted, and they, all the cases of so-called flu, which is poor diet and excess consumption, all of a sudden we're displaced with all these COVID cases. I mean, we saw that happening in the news, right? So is COVID real?
Well, and I think I think the policies that they championed and like demanded everybody follow, stay inside, don't get any exercise, don't go out in the sun, shut down the gyms, don't see your family. All these policies have a very negative impact on your health. I mean, it was like setting everybody up to get sick, basically.
Well, yes. And you'll notice that, you know, pornography was given free, and the main center was, I think it was Israel. And so it came out with free pornography throughout COVID. The liquor stores were open.
Wait, hold on. Free? Was that? Are you serious? I didn't even know about that. What do you mean? Like there was like websites that like.
Yeah, made... That's what I read. Yes.
Well, I mean, pornography is basically free anyways. I mean, there's all sorts of pornography sites online that you can access for free, but. That wouldn't surprise me. That's just news to me, I guess.
Well, I mean,
I don't even want to attempt a Google search at that, knowing what'll come up. I think I'll take your word on that one.
Right. Well, and it's been used to destabilize cultures for hundreds and hundreds of years, you know, one way or another, and to attack the. You know, good, clean living. And so it wasn't a surprise to come across that. And then, to promote the liquor stores and consumption of alcohol, like you say, the gyms were closed, the yoga studios were closed. I mean,
the churches were closed, and yet the liquor stores are open. The weeds, I was in California for much of it. The weed stores are all open. Those were essential businesses, didn't you know?
Exactly. Well, you know, just to give you an idea of where I was steeping myself during all of this. I live in a box canyon in a wilderness area. So I look out onto these beautiful meadows and ponderosa pine forests and cottonwoods. You know, the leaves are shimmering and in the sunshine right now. So I basically ignored all of those mandates because they weren't laws. They were just, arrogant people.
It was guidance, and it was recommendations, and it was mandates, and it was public health orders. None of it was lawful. Yeah, there was nothing. Even the vaccines. Nobody. I mean, all you had to do was simply say, "Look, no, sorry, I can't take a vaccine. It's against my religion, or it's against my, you know, my personal health philosophy." I mean, you know, you could stand up and say no. So many people got coerced, though, including a lot of people that were skeptical of the vaccine, but still felt that they needed to take it in order to maintain their job or, you know, whatever. They were pressured by their family or something like that. That, to me, is the saddest aspect of all of this, is a lot of people, I mean, even people I know personally, like, that were very skeptical of the vaccine and yet still caved and took it for they thought their job depended on it or whatever. I mean, I can't even imagine. And many people did ended up getting fired for not taking the vaccine, but the whole thing was just unbelievable. And I think those that saw through it and just refused are really sitting well right now. I'll say that.
Well, it was tremendous harm and coercion. And those businesses were paid handsomely to pressure and really a part of the this assault, this war against humanity. And you'll notice that, you know, some of the most egregious, some of the most aggressive businesses were health food stores, where they were, you know, telling people they must mask up. And then corporations that were forcing their employees to get vaccinated or they would lose their job, threats to lose their jobs. So, I've known about the harms of vaccines for a very long time. My former husband was an author and wrote books about the harm of vaccines and the impacts on the animals. So I've been well aware for many decades. And so I knew that this was just a ploy to harm again. And if we look back through history at all of the harms that have been perpetrated through the food, through the white sugar and the scam and the lies about white sugar. And I mean, it's been going on and on and on. And so really right now, people have to wake up. They have to go through a huge education. You know, it's like, it sounds like you just are tremendously curious yourself and have all these different areas of work that you're very interested in. And that's what everyone must do. But what that does also, John, is that it connects us with living. It connects us with our life. And one of the things that I see, and it's one of the most egregious things, is that people are hooked to the storyline that is being given to them by these world tyrants.
Right.
Instead of creating and living their own life, people's lives have been absolutely stolen. But we've given our lives to them, and that is really sad, because they don't get a second time to live their life. So
right.
That to me is.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I mean, like, throughout the whole entire quote unquote COVID pandemic, I mean, all you had to do was just turn off the TV and you wouldn't even think anything of a pandemic. I mean, what are you talking about? There's no pandemic. Nobody's sick. I mean, that's all it took. It just stop listening to these liars, gaslight you and psychologically manipulate you. I mean, this was I view it basically as one gigantic, like, psychological terrorist operation against the whole world. You know, yes. I mean, that's basically what it was. It's still going on. Exactly. And I mean, and there have been a lot of people that have woken up. It seems like with every one of these, like, big operations they pull, whether it was 9/11 or COVID or, you know, any other number of events, there's more and more people that see through it and start asking questions and start wondering, okay, none of this makes sense. Why are they immediately, like, promoting all these tyrannical political agendas in the aftermath of these alleged crises or pandemics or whatever. So there's more and more people seeing through the lies and attempting to connect the dots. It's a long process, right? I mean, I don't think any of us have all the answers, but it's a process. That's what life is all about, is trying to figure out what the heck is going on and doing the right thing and standing up for what you believe in. And it sounds like that's sort of your mindset as well.
Go ahead. Well, it is, but we're at the 11th hour, and it's not like this is new. This has been going on for thousands of years. The master-slave system has been in place for thousands of years. We've just been taught all these lies, and everything has been done through compartmentalization. So we haven't actually put the big picture in place. So what I'm finding is that, and, you know, I mentioned that I'm a writer and a poet. Now, I wrote a poem after reading a number of pieces of Ezra Pound's work and his colleagues, so the 20th century poets, and they were writing about what was going on between World War I and World War II and after World War II. And Ezra Pound was institutionalized because the military wanted to shut him up because he saw the communism. And so after I went through this phase of reading all these poems of these poets, I wrote a poem, and that it was really a tribute to Ezra Pound. And after I wrote the poem, I went into shock because I finally connected the dots of the last 3,000 years until today. And for some reason, there was still that level of compartmentalization. And all of a sudden, it just came in like this dam burst. And so having that fluidity of history now occupying my mind and being, it has been one of the most troubling and one of the most freeing, because now I see what's perpetrated, and now I see what the intention is, and now I see the dire need of us taking action now and not spending another 15 years, peeling the layers off the onion. But now, I mean, we have to take action. We have to stop this tyranny, because this world is going in a direction that, without bifurcation, and heading off and living our own lives free and separately from that damaging system of AI and bugs in our, as our protein and addiction to our scrying mirrors of the cell phones, et cetera, we'll be lost as a species.
Yeah.
And particularly the white race. We must remove ourselves from all the toxins from the cell phone, the Wi-Fi, so that we can reproduce and produce our white race again, because it is being destroyed.
Wow, very well said. I completely agree with you. And I'm going to encourage people. I'll have a link over to your Odyssey channel. I subscribe to you on Odyssey, and you have a lot of videos up there, a lot of interviews you've done. Are you still doing this Women's Worth, Man's Worth podcast?
Well, I
know it's been a couple of years, but
I've been so preoccupied now with the court battle that I have very little time to do much anything other than the court.
But I did want to mention that.
BitChute is the one that has the majority of mine, and YouTube as well, but I'm slowly being cut out of YouTube, and they keep declaring that my uploads are hate speech. And so right now the strikes against me prevent me from putting any further up. But BitChute is the one that has the most of my
influence. Okay. I'll have a link to your BitChute channel as well. I have your Odyssey page pulled up here, but I'll put a link to both channels, and it has all sorts of content. If anybody's interested in learning more about
you.
And it's very interesting stuff. So we got to talk, we've only got about 15 minutes or so left, and we haven't even got to the main topic, which of course is this, this judicial, like legal struggle you're involved with. And the first question I have is, I mean, you've been living in like rural Mora County, New Mexico. First off, I mean, what's it like living there? I mean, because a lot of the legal disputes are, involving like the county and some of the residents in the county, right?
Well, actually, when I first moved here, and it was very different. It was a little bit like how the cities have evolved. I mean, I wouldn't see anyone for weeks unless I went out to the post office, which is about 15 miles away. And now I see people pretty much daily. So I'm very rural. I'm on a large piece of property, but people would say, some of the most troubled people move out to the remote areas, and yes, I was my former husband and I were harassed by a fellow up the mountain twice, and he was convicted for harassment by the state, convicted and charged, and given restraining orders. And
So this guy was like, he was like one of your neighbors? I mean, or not.
yeah,
Okay, yeah.
a mile up the mountain.
Right.
Yeah,
What was
yeah.
he, can I ask, what was he doing? How was he harassing you?
Well, he was an alcoholic and addicted to pot, and he would come down and he would be drunk, and he would start swearing and cursing, waving his hands. And he had friends who would come down, and so I'd be outside gardening and working in my on my property, and I just go back into the house because someone I knew who was a therapist said, "Don't give him, don't give him an inch. Don't, and so just ignore him." So I'd go back in the house. I'd call the police. I'd make a report, and this went on for a year. In both
And
cases, it went
sir,
on for a year.
and real quick, when was this, when did this like first start occurring?
Oh, this was around 2000.
Oh, okay, so
And
we're going back like 20 years now. Okay.
we're going back 20 years, but when I moved back here, and then he would drive on a road that and park his truck, and he would shine his lights into our property, and then blast his music and curse at the top of his lungs, and I mean just juvenile, juvenile behavior. And so then when I moved back here in late 2018, I swear by proxy, he got a friend of his to start the harassment again. Because no sooner had I arrived than I'm being cursed at again by another guy. And so the first guy was a chicken slinger who lived up the mountain. And while I was away, he had also been busted by the state for drugs. And so he had three charges and convictions against him. So I figure that if he had gotten one more, he would have been put in the slammer. So he had his friend by proxy harass me. And at this point, I was already being sued by the wealthiest person probably in this entire county, who's been known to be called the Rockefeller of Mora County. And he was very politically connected. And there have been some, if you look him up, you can see that he visited Biden's White House. So that's a little frightening. But so that was going on. What I didn't realize 4 years ago was that that both cases were completely combined and very conspiratorially. And the same attorney represented the guy who sued me on the easement, and then this guy who started harassing me. I found out that this guy who started harassing me as proxy had spent 14 years in prison in Colorado and New Mexico for violent crimes, battery of a household member with a lethal weapon, and in Colorado for a first, second, third degree rape, trespass, drunken disorderliness, theft. And the list went on. And so for 33 years, he's lived a life of crime. The same judge showed up on both of these cases, interestingly, incestuously,
Now,
amazing.
this is Judge Michael Aragon.
Aragon, yes.
Aragon. Okay, yeah. Yeah, no, it's very strange. It's like it will and I'm actually looking at a story that was published by Yahoo News. I think it was originally the Santa Fe, New Mexican, and this was from
Oh,
January
yes.
2022. Yeah, and I'll have a link to this article if anybody's interested in reading it when I post the podcast. It kind of gives some of the background details. But yeah, it's like all these cases that you're involved with, there's all these same sorts of people involved in it, like presiding over it, representing the people, that sort of thing. So yeah, it is sort of Weird how that just happened to work out that way, right?
Well, it wasn't, it didn't just happen.
Well, I know, that's what I'm getting at.
You're saying that facetiously. But the other interesting element in this, John, is that I found out through the Mora County Sheriff's Office that the judge had represented this felon, this guy, this rapist, in a criminal trespass case. And so I exposed that to the courts. It took that judge, Michael Aragon, 4 months before he would recuse himself. And so then there was another judge who was appointed from Santa Fe. And she was just as pathetic as he was, both of them perjuring their oaths of office. And they swear an oath to uphold the New Mexico and the national constitutions as the supreme law of the land, to bring justice for all New Mexico citizens. And they perjured their oath because I brought my case before the courts requesting an Article III constitutional court. And of course, we know that the courts are corporatized, that the government is a corporation and the courts are corporations. So these are corporate administrative tribunals. And then I found out by doing a little bit of research that these courts of New Mexico and the courts of Nebraska and the courts of Ontario, and they're all listed on Dun & Bradstreet, doing business for profit. And isn't that a real, really amazing thing
so
to
it's,
find
it's
out?
So it's like a private for-profit entity presiding over civil and criminal disputes?
That's exactly correct. And since when are we the slave of a master? Because that's what they're saying. This is a master-slave system. I am a man and I preside over you. But no, I was born free. I was born as a sovereign woman. No one is over me other than my creator.
Right.
And no man has that power to be the master of me. But we do know that for thousands of years, we know 3,000 years ago that master slave, I mean, look at the Romans and the Iceni-ans. I mean, they destroyed them and they enslaved them, right? And that enslavement has never stopped. But we're only enslaved if we allow the enslavement. And I'm basically saying, look, based on my knowledge of my constitutionally guaranteed rights, of my Bill of Rights, I am the master of myself and I stand asserting my rights, and no man has any authority over me. And that's my assertion in the courts.
So you, and just to clarify, so you've been pursuing these legal cases as both a plaintiff and a defendant, totally representing yourself?
Yes. And so I speak for myself sui juris, and I use the term sui juris, and I define myself that way because it is a completely autonomous woman. I'm a completely autonomous woman, a living, breathing woman of flesh and blood on the land, with all my inalienable and unalienable rights as guaranteed to me in the Constitution. Now, if you speak for yourself pro se, that means that you accept the jurisdiction of admiralty, maritime contract law, which is the legal system. I come to the courts declaring my lawful rights using the Constitution as the foundation of my arguments. The Bill of Rights amended to the Constitution in 1791. So I am not a part, and I do not accept the jurisdiction of the courts, because that whole system is completely rigged to enslave us. It's a master-slave system.
So sui juris, like the legal distinction between sui juris versus pro se is basically conceding to this like private system, right? Is that, do I have
yes.
that right? Oh, okay.
Yes. You're accepting the jurisdiction. And when you're pro se, really
You're just not having like a legal representative. You're doing it on your own behalf, but you're basically assuming that the whole entire system itself is legitimate and, you know, on the up and up, I guess, right?
Well, no, actually not. So I'm not a part of the legal system. The legal system has been manufactured by the Bar Association from 1897 or some year like that the Bar Association formulated themselves, and they're related to Britain. You know, every bar attorney is a foreign agent. They're not even of the United States. Their allegiance is to Britain, and so they currently have over 43 million statutes or rules and regulations and assumptions and presumptions, opinions, and et cetera, et cetera.
It sounds just very Talmudic, frankly. I mean, like the whole entire thing.
you got the right word. Yes, it is totally Talmudic. And so they trap you with the dizzying of their rules and their statutes to enslave us. I refuse, I reject, I do not accept that jurisdiction. The jurisdiction upon which I stand is the Constitution. And that Constitution is based upon the work that was done, and maybe, you know, flawed as it is, by the Founding Fathers and when they revised the Articles of Confederation in 1789, and then amended it in 1791 with the Bill of Rights. It is something to be able to use to assert our rights and not get wrapped up in this dizzying legal system. But the courts are not courts of justice. They have exposed themselves. They are doing business for profit. The Dunn's number that New Mexico courts exposes is, can be looked up, and it's shocking to see that they arrogantly claim that they are doing business. The New Mexico judiciary, in a sea of companies of almost, I think, 1,600 or 1,800 businesses, and they don't cover that up.
That's what I was gonna ask. I mean, do you think that like these judges and these lawyers, like the people, like most average lawyers, that have been past the bar and are part of the Bar Association or whatever, do you think they even realize this, like what they're actually involved in?
Well, I think there are some very, very uneducated men and women who are in the legal system.
That's what I think as well. Yeah.
And they're very gullible, and they just learn what they're taught. They just consume and they're not thinking. So I've been up against that in magistrate court. So I think they're really having now, the dumbing down of America has been happening for a very long time. And Isherbert wrote this incredible book about the dumbing down of America. I've forgotten her first name, but we've been seeing that.
You're talking about Charlotte Isherbert?
Yes, Charlotte. Yeah. Yes. Thank you. So yes, and I don't. I think some of them might know, but I think they're so I think they're just so entranced by the money that they're making. Because when I say that the courts are listed on Dun & Bradstreet, what they do with every case that is brought forward by a police officer, that case is turned into three bonds, and those bonds are traded on the stock exchange. And that is how money is brought into the judiciary system. And now today.
Wow. Seriously? In any bond, like that's how it works?
Well, that's how it works with the case numbers that are turned into bonds and traded on the stock exchange through the judiciary system.
Wow, I had no idea.
And those bonds can be like $200,000, $400,000, $500,000. I mean, we're not talking, you know, a couple thousand dollars or a couple hundred dollars. And then if you add into that, John Whitehead did a very revealing and rather Frankensteinish article just a couple days ago on the prison systems. And the states now have quotas to meet at how many Americans go to jail. And they're increasing the numbers of states that have contracted to keep their prisons at 90 to 100% capacity. And I must say, so when I filed for a civil restraining order against this man who was harassing me, a court that is a court of justice, an Article III court, would take a look at that and say, oh, yes, she's claiming her Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights to be safe and protected on her property. Let's, you know, I'm going to issue a permanent restraining order against this man. And look at his history. I mean, this guy is, you know, he's a criminal. He's a felon. But what they did, he hired the same attorney, paid for, is my sense, by this very wealthy man. And that
the very wealthy man. The very wealthy man who you're also in a separate legal dispute with, right?
Yes, who sued me to widen my easement.
Yeah.
So
this is interesting.
That attorney sued me claiming that I was a menace, in part because I was calling the police every time this guy was harassing me. Well, I don't consider that being a menace. I'm a single woman living in a wilderness area and someone's harassing me, threatening to shoot my dogs, swearing and cursing, blasting his music. I mean, disrupting my life with intention.
What do they expect you to do? I mean, well, like, that's the thing. Like, what are your options?
This patron system, they want to control. They want to control you. And as you can tell, I can't be controlled. I declare my freedom. I declare my autonomy. And they wanted me to kowtow. They wanted me to – they were trying to break me. They're still trying to break me. That's what they've been doing for 4 years, trying to break me. And they thought for certain that they would financially bleed me and they would steal my property. This is a land grab. But I represented myself and represent myself sui juris. So I'm not paying attorney's fees because I could see that coming a long time ago. So in this.
Well, good for you.
Well, I mean, it's like I say, I really wasn't interested in learning about law. But, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And so I've had to.
Wow, it's so interesting. And I'm so sorry. I am going to have to wrap up here in just a minute, but there's probably much more that we could talk about, and we'll have to – I'd love to do this again. I mean, this is – you know, we've kind of only scratched the surface with so many of these topics, including the whole legal situation. I mean, I'd like to talk more about the health issues as well, but
sure.
Yeah, no, so I guess to kind of wrap up, I mean, obviously there's much more you could say about this, but where do you currently stand? I mean, first off, could you maybe just – mention like how many different like separate lawsuits you're dealing with right now and where they all kind of stand, and then we'll kind of wrap up.
Okay. So I've been sued twice. I'm being sued twice right now. Once by this wealthy, politically connected man who has threatened to shoot me in the head with a gun.
And this is one of the most wealthy men in this entire county.
Yes.
Okay, right.
He's considered the Rockefeller of Mora County, yes. And then the lawsuit by this felon, rapist, who has been harassing me, and his attorney sued me. And his attorney, I believe, is being paid for by the man who has the easement. And they all know one another. So the guy up the mountain, the chicken slinger up the mountain who harassed my husband, former husband and myself before, and this wealthy landowner and this felon, they all know one another. And so it's a conspiracy. So then the other aspect of all of this is I have managed to get both of these cases in the Court of Appeals. And but the Court of Appeals are, you know, they're bar attorneys, and they're just as they're listed on Dun & Bradstreet doing business for profit. They're no different than the lower courts. So, to wrap this up, John, the most stunning part of all of this at this point in time is in the last hearing, the attorney demanded of the courts to have me put in prison.
For what? On what basis?
Well, during the trial, the attorney conjoined the two lawsuits, which was completely a violation of due process of law. He brought up an issue of the width of the easement, which the wealthy landowners want me to widen my road, which I'm saying, no, this is my private property, and I won't go into the detail because we have to wrap it up. So, and they also want me to pay for all the money that it has cost for legal fees, which is about $38,000. So I've declared my constitutionally secured rights, and that I will not pay, I will not comply with their unlawful, unconstitutional judgment. And so the attorney is saying she must be locked up because she's not complying with this judgment. And so
you're in contempt of court or something like that.
They're claiming I'm in contempt of court, and okay, they're using a current case out of Albuquerque where a bar attorney revealed the malfeasance of a judge, and they have disbarred him, and they have charged him with contempt of court. So they're charging me with contempt of court using this legal statute that they have now tidily packaged.
Well, this is another example of the total like weaponization of the whole entire legal process. I mean, even like, not to even get into the Trump situation, but for example, like some of his lawyers were like debarred and, you know, prosecuted themselves simply for representing him. You know, it's like they've totally like turned the whole system on its head.
Right. And I won't comment on any of that.
Or at least what most people would assume to believe the court system is supposed to be all about.
Well, what I've been doing, and this is one of the reasons why I'm very grateful to be able to do this interview with you, is I want to shine light onto the corruption of the court system. I want people to realize these are not courts of justice. These are corporate administrative tribunals. They're doing business for profit. They're not really comfortable having the light shone on them. They really take issue with the fact that I call them out as business, you know, doing business for profit. They don't like the fact that I call them acting judges. They're not pleased with the fact that I expose that they are perjuring their oaths by not upholding my constitutionally secured rights. I'm telling them that they're creating treason, committing treason, and that treason is punishable by death and death by hanging. And I tell that to the judge, and,
wow,
and they don't like that, but it's true. I mean, these aren't my words. I know what treason is, and I know that it is punishable by death, and I'm letting them know that I know. And so here I am standing here, and I am saying, look, I'm waging battle against you because this is a war against humanity. You're not my master. I'm not your slave, and I will never be your slave. You can put me in prison. However, you've already got me in prison because I'm unable to spend the time improving my life, creating more music, writing more poems. I mean, I still do, and I'm still studying health, and I'm still doing reflexology, but not to the degree that I want. What they've done is they've helped educate me in my constitutionally secured rights. They've actually been one of my greatest educators, and they've improved my writing because I have stacks and stacks of court documents, and they're good stories. I've actually written them, and they're good stories. So my writing has improved, my editing has improved. So in a lot of ways, I get to say thank you very much, acting judge. Thank you very much, opposing attorney. You are improving my skills, and I am becoming stronger. I am reaching for more courage, and I will not submit.
Wow, Kathleen, good for you. I mean, geez, I I've got a lot more to learn about that. There's so many, obviously there's so many subjects to learn about, but this whole situation, and it seems like that's very much your experience. Like you didn't anticipate getting in this involved in, you know, representing yourself and learning about, you know, the actual way the courts are supposed to work and how it's basically like this private, I mean, it's almost like a private business, you know, just
it is like a private business.
Yeah. That's the way
it's corporations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've heard, you know, I've heard people talk about this before in the past, but I mean, I think like maybe just like looking at your example and your experience kind of like really sheds, you know, a deeper light on that. And it's pretty obvious that that is exactly how these court systems operate and the people that are involved with it. It's all about making money and punishing anybody that's standing up and yes. recognizing it like yourself. So,
well, and we see that with Monica Schaefer and we see that with Alfred Schaefer and the
yeah,
whole list
absolutely.
Of folks that are imprisoned across Canada and Australia and Austria and everywhere else. And, you know, it's criminal. And, you know, and the thing that I, you know, ask people to do is to call the Attorney General's office in New Mexico and speak on behalf of my constitutionally secured rights, because he came out against the governor who attempted to ban the Bernalillo County's rights to their Second Amendment to bear arms. The problem is they have jammed the phone numbers. They don't answer their phones. Their 800 number is down. And all of this is since I've been giving these numbers out. I cannot get through to the Attorney General's office. So it's a very interesting way in which they, you know, they work their system. They control who can have access to them and who can't.
Right.
Can you say?
Yeah. Well, Kathleen, hang in there. Keep up the good fight. And we'll stay in touch and we'll definitely do this again in the future. There's much more we could talk about. And I wish you the best.
Sounds great, John.
Yeah, I wish you the best of luck. And yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, well, my pleasure. Thank you very much for the opportunity. You have a good afternoon.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.